Hi, Micah. Lost you there.
Yeah, sorry for the disconnect. Just calling you on a landline, so that should
Okay.
be all right.
All right. Yeah, I was just saying I want to respect your time this morning. I told you I'd try to keep it to 15 minutes. So I figure we could jump right in. Maybe you could tell me a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, no problem at all. So, myself as well as everyone else on the team had to learn languages independently. So that personally for me was when I was in Israel between high school and college, and kind of learned the language from scratch there. Everyone else on the team has also gone through experiences through learning languages independently as adults. And I actually speak the least languages on the team at two. Everybody else is quad and pentalingual.
Wow.
And yeah, we found that it was a very frustrating experience going through kind of traditional methodology, that even if a web program or a mobile app could make it fun through having more gamification or a better UX, it was still, they all kind of suffered from the same problem, that they put every user through the exact same kind of static linear curriculum. You learn the exact same things in the exact same way as everybody else.
Right.
Which is particularly frustrating if you come in as an intermediate, for example, and you know some parts of the language, and but the program, you know, assigns something kind of arbitrary what they think an intermediate knows or doesn't know.
Right.
And it also, you know, teaches the relevant stuff. I ended up learning. I started before going to Israel. I learned a little bit of Hebrew through Rosetta Stone and came in knowing like the elephant is wet to start out with. So. And everybody has like, where's the library? The mouse is under the table stories, you know? And so, one thing that we tried to do with Language Zen was to make it a lot more relevant. So, like for the main course, we actually data mine real conversation from like TV tr from TV transcripts to teach you what you actually hear and use in the real world. Professionally, graduated from USC in California with international relations and entrepreneurship. Previously, founded and ran a bike company, which included importing,
Okay.
and was in the solar energy industry for about a year and a half, running biz dev there, with a commercial solar installer,
Okay.
and started this with my partner about almost 3 years ago.
Wow, those are very different industries to jump between.
They are.
And was there any connection to them or reason you picked them?
If they did well, they wouldn't make the world a worse place. I
Okay.
generally like working in industries that have some sort of net positive impact. And so and partially that's so that I can kind of be focused entirely on the business and not really worry about things more existentially or ethically.
Okay.
But in general, it was just kind of seeing opportunities and seeing areas where things could be done much better. I don't really like the idea of just going in, of saying, oh, this is a really hot industry. What can I do? It's more, is there a solution I see for a problem that I know is real?
Okay.
And that's sort of been the common thread between them, and it has been a little bit industry agnostic now.
So do you think that's been part of why you've been able to achieve success in different industries, that you're focused more on how it could, make the world a better place if it succeeds?
Not really. That's sort of more just something that I actually like looking if it makes the world a better place as a way that I cannot need to worry about anything but actually making the business successful.
Gotcha.
If I was in, let's say, petroleum or natural gas, in like a petroleum company, for example, I would feel conflicted between doing everything I can to maximize the success of the business and be able to maximize what we're able to give our customers, mixed with what perhaps negative impact can this have, or is this having, and how can I mitigate it? When doing something, when working in an industry where if the company does well overall, it'll be helping people or helping the environment. At that point, all I need to focus about is offering something really good for our customers and also being successful as a company itself. And so I can kind of, and so one of the things that attracts me of it is one of, is that I actually don't need to worry as much about evaluating every small decision about does this have a net social good or a net social bad, which is, I know that most entrepreneurs don't really think along those lines, but it is something that has always sort of been on my radar.
I see. That makes sense. So what, I guess, in doing this and figuring out that process, is there a mistake that stands out that you had to learn from?
Initially with a solar company, that wasn't something that I found that I came in there. And it was an example, actually, of what not to do in some ways, because, and I prefer, you know, not obviously not mentioning the name of the company in the, when you do the full interview or when you are doing the article.
Sure, yeah.
But it was going into a hot industry, and it was putting together a basic good sales operation, but it was coming with an undifferentiated product. It was an area where we could say how we were better than, you know, 80% of our competitors.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it was an absolute commodity when compared to the companies that were doing things right. And unless you, and that was one lesson that I took from that, which is, you know, no matter how good the industry is as a whole, or no matter how, or no matter, you know, how much it would help the world, unless you come in with something that is meaningfully differentiated from the people who have been in there longer and have more money than you,
mm-hmm.
It's not, for me, it feels, it's a waste of time.
Right. It's not going to be as fulfilling.
Yeah. And also has a lot, and also is a lot less likely to be successful.
Right. That makes sense. So here's another question for you. As you've been doing all this, how do you consistently deliver each day? Is there something you do to keep yourself productive? Because I know we all go through slumps. So do you go through slumps, or do you avoid them somehow?
I go through slumps too. I try to avoid them and make them as short as they can be. But I have slumps as well. Particularly, you know, we're a distributed team, so we are not in an office together, for example, to have that type of just momentum of seeing your coworkers in person.
Mm-hmm.
So working closely with other folks on the team is important. You know, I talk with my partner, co-founder, multiple times a day throughout the day, even though we're in different time zones,
mm-hmm.
And areas, as well as with the other team members. Also, for myself, I found kind of, if there is a period of not feeling motivated, trying to understand where it's coming from and trying to find where ways around it, essentially. You know, sometimes I was thinking about the big goal, you know, where we would be a year from now or 2 years from now, is sort of what it took to kind of be putting in those 12-hour days, which is pretty normal for startups.
Right.
If at a certain point it was looking, okay, well, what it was focused more on the specific deliverables we could be doing in the next week or in the next day. And that was what kind of kept it exciting. And also breaking things up. I'm a big fan of, very specifically, I'm a big fan of Pomodoro timer, doing 25-minute work sessions mixed with 5-minute breaks, often, you know, doing something physical like working out or taking care of physical chores.
That's a good way of doing it. I think, you know, that's a good approach, because you have different tools in your arsenal, because it is going to depend on the day. You have to, if you want to succeed at that level consistently, then you can't really afford to let yourself get distracted. So I like that you have different ways to pull yourself back into the game. Do you have any advice for someone who maybe they are at a company right now, and they share kind of the same feelings that you do in terms of wanting to work for a company that they can believe in and not feel conflicted about, that is maybe more of a commodity thing, and either they want to do their own thing or fix the company they work in, what would you your advice to them be?
For fixing a situation where they feel like, I don't know if I entirely understand the question.
You mentioned before that you made the distinction that some companies, if you work there, if they don't have a an important distinction to separate them from other companies that provide value in a particular way, you might feel conflicted working there because while you might be successful in one sense, making money, you're not at the end of the day doing something that makes the world a better place. So how would someone get away from that or work to improve their current situation to align with that vision?
Well, doing something different and unique, you know, a lot of that's and that's something that other people aren't. I view that as being, you know, that can be more personally fulfilling, and it can also be more successful from a business standpoint, but also that's different from a company that is necessarily doing social good or environmental good, for example. And so one of the things that I'm in terms of social or environmental, one of the things that I would say is if, you know, if this was scaled to be huge, if everybody was doing this, if this was scaled to be massive, would it be good or bad? Would it be enhancing people's lives or not? Or would it be enhancing the environment or not? And where would things kind of even out with that? You know, I wouldn't personally be comfortable doing a gossip site, for example, because I feel like it contrib if it was huge and massively successful, I feel like it wouldn't necessarily make things a better place. So that's sort of one aspect. The other aspect, in terms of being differentiated or not, it's I think the biggest thing is being honest with yourself. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, and I expect employees as well, it can be easy to get caught up in, I guess, your own enthusiasm about, because you're there, you're working with a team, you're doing something. And I think the biggest thing to seeing is if what you're working on unique and different is what are our real differentiators, not compared to the crappy guys in our space, but compared to the good guys in our space. And if it's we have better marketing, then you're probably not doing something that's really different.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, you got to sit down, ask the hard questions, and be willing to be honest with the answers. And in terms of finding a differentiator, you have to, I would say, put in the work, right, to actually look at your market and see what's different and make sure it's not something just like marketing, because that's not really a difference. That's just telling people about it differently. Okay. Well, we've got a couple more minutes here. If we come back to language, then obviously you feel that this can help make the world a better place. You've already started with Spanish, I believe. What other languages do you have coming next?
So we're going to be having English. That's a pretty high priority for us. Initially for Spanish speakers, but then scaling it from there. And in addition, we're wanting to hit the languages that are high priority in the English-speaking market. So being able to get French out the door, and eventually focus on East Asian languages. So I know it's not a one language answer, but it is now that we've demonstrated what we're able to do on the Spanish, it's pretty exciting for us to be able to scale to additional languages as rapidly as funding allows.
So I kind of poked around the site a little bit, and I saw that, you know, you can learn from audio and kind of some different approaches. Is your focus to get people conversational, or is it also to learn to read and write the different languages?
So there's a reading and writing component. You know, we let people answer questions in different ways, either through speaking it or writing or a mixture of the two. We focus, you know, on, we largely focus on listening comprehension, as well as some reading comprehension. But ultimately, the biggest where we want to be, and the area where we've de and how we've designed the system is that through using language then faster than any other method, we'll be able to get you to the point where you can have real conversations with people and learn organically. Because the fact is, there's no substitution for being in the country you want to be in and talking to people entirely in the language you're wanting to learn. but you need to get to a certain level to be able to have those experiences. And it's our job to get you as quickly as possible to where you can.
So what's a time frame if someone sat down and did this every day, they could get to that point where they could have some basic conversations, ask for directions in the country?
So we've been proven to actually be able to teach an entire semester's worth of college-level Spanish in only 25 hours. So the time that, so if it's, let's say, asking basic directions, we have specialized courses on those types of subjects, so like travel essentials and getting around and ordering at a restaurant. You know, those are all actually specialized areas that we have. The main course is based off of conversational language through the conversational data mining. But if you were to, and besides that, it comes to the level of proficiency you want. You know, I've been able to get around with only investing about 5 or 10 hours into the basics, and it's not a problem at all. If you're wanting to get to the point where you can have real conversations, real relationships, you'll be wanting to put in more time than that, but a lot less than you would with any other method.
Well, that's encouraging because I know people are busy. I know myself am busy as well. I have another question out of curiosity. You mentioned you'll be moving to East Asian languages eventually. Do you think that the methods you're using for the more, you know, English, French, Spanish type languages for reading and writing, do you think that's going to translate well, or are you going to have to redo your approach?
There's definitely tweaks we're going to need to change for the East Asian languages. So, for example, we're going to be inputting the language through Pinyin, and most likely having there being the reading component with traditional characters. I think that with East Asian, with Chinese for Mandarin in particular, we're going to be focusing more on the conversational side and less with the reading, just because there is much more of a differentiation. Unlike, you know, alphabetic language, reading doesn't help you speak better, while it does, you can't like transliterate a word and get the meaning from it.
Right.
And so, you know, people will be able to put in their answers through Pinyin, and we'll be working with simplified standard Chinese, but our focus will be more on the conversational side. So, for example, we're going to have additional exercises with tonality, where you're going to hear things which would sound the same except for the tone, and to be able to train our users to be able to differentiate from that effectively.
Nice. I think that makes sense. I've studied a little bit of Mandarin, which is why I ask. So I'm looking forward to that. But so far, I like what I've seen. I am looking forward to trying it out myself with Spanish. Can I wrap up this way and just ask if you have something we can share with the Life in Charge readers in terms of a discount code or a way to get started? Where do they go? All that.
Yeah. So you go to languagezen.com, and I'll make up a discount code for you to be able to share with your users to get about 20% off the premium membership that can be open for a couple months after you do the broadcast.
Okay, great. I'll get that from you, and then I'll add it to the post when I put up the audio. Anything else you want to end with? Any other places people can contact you, Twitter, Facebook, etc.?
Yeah, we're active on our Facebook. On our website itself, if you click the feedback button, it'll be coming into our mailbox and coming to the team. And always love to hear from other language learners, people who are interested in what we're doing, and always open to people's feedback.
Okay, well, I really appreciate your time, Micah. I'll let you go. I'm looking forward to following Language Zen as it grows and adds more languages.
Absolutely.
All right, take care.